Whether it's audiobooks or all-time greatest hits, long live listening to your favorites. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you.
This morning on the Wake Up Call with KB and Andy.
We're delayed in round one of the Masters. I'm pissed. Christmas has been delayed. Not happy.
Yeah, and your headphones just broke all at the same time.
Luckily, yours are usually loud enough. I can hopefully hear Chuck Pagano through yours.
Well, that's because I can't hear anything. So
I'm trying to multitask over here to get the...
You want
to
use mine?
Get the old headset
back. I'll just set mine in the middle of the table, and we'll just community use my headphones the rest of the way.
It is one of my favorite events of the year, an absolute beautiful cause, and I guess the man behind it all. He is Chuck Pagano, the 12th annual Chuck Strong Tailgate Gala tomorrow night at the Indiana Farm Bureau Football Center. Andrew Luck in attendance, and the number just always astonishes me every time I see it. More than $14 million raised for cancer research at the IU Simon Cancer Center. Chuck joins us now. Coach, good Thursday morning to you. Can we get a Masters pick out of you before we move on?
Is it going to start? I mean, Lord, I mean, I should have brought my arc.
Literally.
The rain here is egregious. Yeah. I was expecting sunshine and clear skies and a happy Kevin Bowen, and I got to hear KB just bitching about his headphones, bitching about the Masters. Hey, I think this is
like de-icing Santa's sleigh on Christmas morning. Imagine if you woke up on Christmas and said, hey, kids, go back to sleep for two more hours.
KB, you need to start putting some real positivity, you know, manifest some, put it out in the universe, and good things are going to start to happen, I tell you.
Coach, good morning. Hey.
I feel like I'm in a locker room speech right now.
Coach, I wanted
to say
this. Last time you were on with us, Coach, you gave KB a hard time because he was being a wet blanket about Pascal Siakam. You know, Siakam's only averaged, you know, 25 points and played great defense in 40 games this year for the Pacers.
Great to lose time.
He's an absolute monster, and I remember vividly, you know, the conversation, you know, KB bitching about that Siakam trade, this, that, the other.
Lukewarm.
Here we go. They're going to make the playoffs, and who wants to play them? But I think my Masters pick, who are you guys going with?
Well, I toss the question to you. You're the one that's almost, I think you almost made, or you did make a hole-in-one up at Holiday Farms, if I've heard correctly, over the years. My heart says Tiger. My head says Jordan Spieth.
Yeah. I mean, God, wouldn't that be something to see Tiger? I think the easy one is say, okay, because Scotty's playing so damn good, right?
Sure.
You know, but and Rory, it's been such a long time. I like some long shot Kepka. I like Dustin Johnson. Joaquin Neiman.
Ooh.
Maybe people could put a little wager on those. Get pretty good odds.
I like that.
The Chilean right there, Chuck Pagano.
I like that. Going off the board a little bit. Chuck Pagano with us here on the Payless Liquors Hotline. Coach, I wanted to ask you, I know you'll be asked about this. I know you've been asked about this the last decade plus, but do you get time as it gets closer to this event every year now? Do you get time to reflect on kind of what you've done here, you and the people have done to raise this much money, your own fight with cancer and those going through it every single day? Do you get a time to just kind of sit down for a few seconds or minutes and kind of reflect? And when did you know that you wanted to do something like this that would change people's lives?
Well, the last part of that is as soon as I knew I was going to be okay and I got to go back to work and I was in remission, I just figured Tina and I sat down and said, hey, look, you know, during that process, if we get through this, so many people reached out to encourage me, my family, people that obviously we didn't know, all walks of life. It didn't matter. So we said, hey, we get through this, we're going to pay it forward. And, you know, as long as I'm living and breathing, we're going to do what we can to help battle this relentless, egregious disease that doesn't discriminate. So early on, again, very, very blessed to be on the other side of it. And seems surreal. You know, I can remember sitting in that hospital bed during that first game, the Green Bay game, and Tina came back to the room. She went to sell breast cancer awareness T-shirts with the ladies, with the other coaches before the game. And then she came back to the room and says, "Hey, have you seen what's going on?" I'm like, "What are you talking about? There's a game. I know we're playing the Packers and all," but she said, "No, everybody's wearing these Chuck Strong T-shirts." You know, so you flip on the TV and you kind of see what's going on and what happened in that stadium and where it's at today. Simply because of, you know, it all starts with Jim Irsay, Irsay family, his generosity, the great people at IU, Simon Comprehensive Cancer Center, all the people in this great state and this city, the generosity of, you know, the folks that have been coming year in and year out and show up. And their generosity and their willingness to keep sharing their talents and their treasures year after year after year. And now, like you said, 12th annual, $14 million raised. Just incredible.
Tomorrow night over at the Indiana Farm Bureau Football Center, Chuck Pagano just laid it out for you right there. More than $14 million raised for cancer research. It'll be the 12th annual Chuck Strong Tailgate Gala. Coach, you've done this before, and if you don't mind, I'd love for you to do it again. If you could walk us through that bye week and you walking off the practice field back in 2012, speaking with the Colts training staff, when you thought something was off, something was wrong. I've always felt it a bit eerie, to be honest with you, that you guys happened to have such an early bye week that year. I don't know if it's fate or what, but I don't know. That's just always been eerie to me. But if you don't mind, could you walk us through what you remember about late September 2012?
Yeah, absolutely. And you remember springtime, draft time, you know, the schedules are about to come out, right? And the first thing you always look for, primetime games, you know, whatever. And then you're always looking, when's the bye? And remember how pissed we were because it was week four. You know, and you always want the bye, you know, middle of the season, you know, 7, 8, 9 weeks in, got guys beat up, try to get opportunity for coaches, players to kind of catch their breath, heal some guys up from nagging injuries, et cetera. So fast forward, you know, lose that heartbreaker to Jacksonville, a couple hours before kickoff that day. I hadn't been experienced bruising all over my torso, my body, fatigue. I thought the fatigue was just football, right? Just the grind, whatever. You know, so I saw the trainers before the game. They said, "Okay, we got a bye coming up. We'll do some blood work, et cetera, see what's going on." So you lose that heartbreaker to Jacksonville, go in the facility, watch the tape with the players Monday. You can practice 2 days, Tuesday, Wednesday. Wednesday we had a team photo, if you remember, had a light practice and sent everybody home. And then Tina and I proceeded to go down to, you know, Simon Cancer Center, sat down with Dr. Kripe, and, of course, you know, I was just going to drive myself down. I even told Tina and Doc. The doc was like, "No, you got to get a ride. This is pretty serious," you know. And so she took me down there, and seen as Dr. Kripe, my oncologist, said, "Hey, 99% sure you've got APL. It's a form of leukemia. We're going to do bone marrow biopsy just to make sure." And it's like, "Are you kidding me?" I thought, there's no way. You know, and then you go to that why me, you know, you start feeling sorry for yourself. And I always go back and say, Robert Mathis in that breakdown in the locker room after Jacksonville, we're sitting there at 1-2, should have won that game. And he said, "Hey, let's come in Monday, look at the tape, own up our mistakes, go back to work. No pity parties in life, no pity parties in football." So I just remembered that and just said, "Okay, what's the game plan? You know, what do I got to do? What are my odds? What are my chances?" And fortunately for me, KB and Andy, I had a form of leukemia that was highly curable, highly treatable. I was at the best place, you know, right time, best place, right time, all that kind of stuff, and got great care and got to the other side of it. But, you know, it's something that's not going away. I've seen a lot of people say goodbye to loved ones much, much too soon. I think it, like I said, it doesn't discriminate. It touches everybody. So we're blessed to be able to give back and help others.
12th annual Chuck Strong Gala going to be tomorrow night. Again, more than $14 million have been raised for cancer research at that IU Simon Comprehensive Cancer Center. Chuck Pagano with the Sear Payless Liquors Hotline. Coach, you got the old quarterback coming out with you tomorrow night. Is that correct?
Hell yeah, man. I'm so fired up that, you know, he's so busy now, doing a lot of different stuff. He was just over in Japan. He sponsored a football clinic over there and doing so many things. I'm just grateful that his calendar was clear and he'd be willing to come back and participate and be part of this event, the 12th annual. It's how fitting, right? 12th annual, number 12, you know, coming back. The theme this year is 12th man, you know, like 12th man at the games, home games especially, right? We're trying to make, you know, life hell for our opponents. So 12th man is all these unbelievable people that have been coming and supporting and giving for so long, trying to make life miserable for the bully we call cancer. So it'll be absolutely incredible having Andrew there, and AC Calhoun's going to, you know, MC a little Q&A with myself and Andrew up on stage. It should be a treat for everybody.
Chuck Pagano with us here on this Thursday on the Wake Up Call. He joins us on the Payless Liquors Hotline. I guess just as a follow-up to that, Coach, do you hope at some point maybe this event will start the healing process of Andrew Luck being around Indianapolis a little bit more? Obviously, very busy. We know how it ended here, but he was also, a great player for this franchise.
Yeah, unbelievable player for this franchise. There's no way that I make it, as long as I make it, you know, without Andrew Luck. And that goes for a ton of players, you know, his teammates and coaches that were on our staff, et cetera. So I would sure hope so. You know, the guy did so much. And I think people just don't understand what these ball players go through on the day-to-day to try to prepare themselves mentally, physically, emotionally, spiritually, whatever, to get ready for the grind of a 17-game season, endure the injuries that he endured. I mean, who's freaking tougher and more competitive than Andrew Luck, and who laid it on the line? I know there was a bunch of guys, but every one of his teammates, everybody in that locker room would tell you that dude's a freaking warrior and gave everything that he had, you know, to this city, the Colts organization, the fans, and whatever. So, yeah, heck yeah. I sure hope so. You know, I'll fight anybody. KB, you got to stand beside me. Somebody tries to get inside, well, I'll fight them all. You know, but I'm just kidding. So I hope so. You know, he deserves that. You know, I know that was a shocker, obviously, to everybody, but you got to respect a guy's livelihood and where these players are at. And you're seeing more and more people, you know, young people walk away from this game with their health and the ability to walk around and function and you know, those type of things. It's a brutal game. It can be so, you know, giving and so unforgiving.
What do you think Andrew Luck does, you know, moving forward, Coach? You know, he's gotten a little bit back into, you know, high school coaching, I guess. You know, he's had such an affinity for history and architecture and all of that. He seems to be a guy that would love to teach one day. What do you think Andrew Luck does from, I guess, a somewhat permanent standpoint here moving forward?
Yeah, I'm not going to obviously speak for him, but we've had many conversations about just what you mentioned. The coaching aspect, the teaching aspect, and it was always like his dream. My father, as you guys know, is a high school football coach in Colorado, driver's ed teacher, so certainly not the historian and academician type person that Andrew is, but was a hell of a football coach. And Andrew always said, man, God, it would be so cool to, you know, be a football coach and the mountains somewhere in Colorado and teach history to high school kids. So that would be my guess. is, and like you said, he's already done a little bit of coaching, you know, there in Palo Alto at high school up there. So that wouldn't shock me to see him going down that road.
Chuck Pagano with us here on the Payless Liquors Hotline. Again, the Chuck Strong Gala coming up tomorrow night. Coach, appreciate the time. You know, I'd be silly not to ask you at least something football here while we got you on. Coaching moves this offseason, whether it be, you know, Jim Harbaugh's back, some of these young guys get jobs, Bill Belichick out there in New England, any of the, I guess, what offseason items, what movements in the NFL offseason interest you in the last few months?
Yeah, I mean, the biggest one, like Bill Belichick can't get a job. And I understand the youth movement, and I think it's fantastic that Jim Harbaugh is back in the National Football League. I mean, NFL, you know, needs Jim Harbaugh more than Jim Harbaugh needs the NFL. So that was a huge gift. But it just shocks me that Coach Belichick, all he's done for this game, the championships that he's won, you know, somebody wouldn't say, hey, yeah, you know, and whether they're scared of his age or they're, you know, the guy being something that he's not, like, hey, he's going to want full control. All the narrative, right, that we saw, heard about that, God almighty. And what a benefit to Jed Fish, the new head coach up at the University of Washington. He gets his son, Steve, be his defensive coordinator. Now Bill's, you know, hanging out at UW. And,
yeah, and I saw that.
Coach Fish, him and Coach Fish are really, really close friends. So now they get the benefit, you know, of Coach Belichick being up there. So, yeah, those couple things, the quarterback movement, you know, carousel is always interesting to see how that thing's going to unfold. So, yeah, looking forward to it. And I really appreciate you guys having me. And can I give a, you know, a little deal where if people want to donate?
Yes.
To the Chuck Strong, all you have to do is text all uppercase Chuck Strong. And the number is to 243-725. That's Chuck Strong, all uppercase, 243-725. You wouldn't mind sharing that throughout the day and tomorrow? I'd appreciate it, fellas.
Chuck, we'll have Mark tweet that out from our show account, retweet that, and continue to do that here throughout the day and leading up to tomorrow. First, I just want to say congrats. It's damn remarkable what you've done, and obviously, like you said, a shout out to the Irsay family for their constant support as well. So many people, Pete Ward, those of the IU Simon Comprehensive Cancer Center, and I know obviously it can be inspiring as a public figure, but I know you've done a lot behind the scenes as well that doesn't get noticed with this stuff, texting people, calling people, inspiring them, encouraging them. So a sincere thank you, Coach, for doing that. Continuing to do it, even though, you know, you might not call Indianapolis home as permanently as you once did. So congrats. Thank you. Can't wait to see you tomorrow night. And as always, Coach, appreciate the time.
Hey, I love being on with you guys. And you hit it. You know, you mentioned Pete Ward, Ashley Wall, Amber Sensini, all those unbelievable human beings down at the Simon Comprehensive Cancer Center and IU. They do an incredible job. There's so many people that volunteer their time. So shout out to all those people who make this event possible. Appreciate you guys. Take care.
Joaquin Niemann, Coach. That's where we're going, right?
Let's go. Put a nice little hundy on Joaquin.
In the alley. Like, you want to fight Chuck Pagano? You're fighting Joaquin Niemann,
no.
Too.
Whether it's audiobooks or all-time greatest hits, long live listening to your favorites. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you.
Did you know St. Jude has one of the largest pediatric sickle cell programs in the country? St. Jude freely shares the discoveries they make, and every child saved at St. Jude means doctors and scientists worldwide can use this knowledge to save thousands more children everywhere. Join me today in helping to fight sickle cell disease by becoming a partner in hope. Call now 1-800-411-9898. That's 1-800-411-9898.
Whether it's audiobooks or all-time greatest hits, long live listening to your favorites. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you.
When St. Jude opened in 1962, childhood cancer was considered incurable. Since then, St. Jude has helped push the overall survival rate from 20% to more than 80%. St. Jude won't stop until no child dies from cancer. Join me today in supporting St. Jude by calling 1-800-411-9898. That's 1-800-411-9898 to become a partner in hope. Your gift to St. Jude could last a lifetime.
It's the Wake Up Call with KB and Andy on 93.5 and 107.5, The Fan.
This was played at the Bowen household last night.
This is your and Maddie's first dance song,
well,
wasn't it?
Probably have to go to a second marriage if I want that to be a possibility. Maddie was like, there's no chance Alexa knows the Masters theme song.
Come on.
I said, I beg to differ. Rosie wasn't too much of a fan, not the same sort of energy level. Maybe that could be, you know, Max's next nap time. We'll have to dial that one up. It is the opening round of the Masters, 2.5 hour delay here for round one. So 10:30, we'll get things underway. Again, the Pacers just one game away from clinching a spot in the top six seed. We'll look at our first Colts on the Clock draft prospect coming up in a half hour. But right now, that lead-in music was for one of our favorites. We have him on frequently around the majors. He is Will Haskett, PGA Tour Radio and Indianapolis resident. Will, good morning. Happy Masters opening round.
I think you're happier than I am, and I work in the space, Kevin. So happy Masters Thursday to you. I tweeted this out the other day. I squeezed in a couple of holes when the weather was nice a couple of days ago, and I was listening to the press conferences on my AirPods while I was walking around the golf course up here. And the before they bring the guys into the interview place, when you're streaming it on Masters social media or whatever, they play the theme song. So there I am standing over an 8-iron, you know, from 150 with music playing in my head. And I'm like, wow, this is – I feel pressure and there's no one around me at all. Like,
this
I'm
might go in.
On a golf course. And I was like, I look, I bared down, man. I had to focus a lot more on an 8-iron in the middle of April than I ever had before because I had that soundtrack blazing, man.
Yeah, I can't think. Yeah, birds chirping in the background, maybe an azalea blooming at the fort or wherever you happen to be playing. As always, Will, we thank you for your insight here. Let's begin with this. You know, from a betting standpoint, Scottie Scheffler is nearing like Tiger versus the field stuff. And that's downright scary, honestly, when I looked at that and saw it. I guess he's on baby watch as well. Should the odds be where they're at, plus 400, which for those unfamiliar with what that means, it's rather insane that Scottie Scheffler is that big of a favorite heading into today.
Yeah, it's the oddest Masters in picking that I can remember just because of that hanging over it. The fact that we have somebody that is as dominant for the first time in, you know, 20 years, really. I mean, since probably mid-2000s Tiger. I guess maybe early 2010s Tiger was also in that sort of mold, you know, after he returned from 2008, but not to the extent that we've seen any other player kind of have this hype going in. So you have to sort of do, it's a double asterisk this week. It's who do you think's going to win if Scottie Scheffler doesn't win? And then also the, yeah, what if Meredith goes into labor 3 weeks early? And then that just throws a whole wrench into the plans as well. So there's a lot of, I guess, questions there. And it's always, you know, the outright favorite hasn't won this tournament in a long time. It's over a decade plus since the lowest odds on the board has actually won the Masters, which is crazy to think because we've had some big names win. But yeah, John Rahm last year was not the betting favorite going into the week, even though he was probably second or third on the board. So does that mean Scottie Scheffler isn't going to win? I don't know. I mean, if the same Scottie Scheffler that showed up at Bay Hill and the Players shows up, no one can beat him. That's an unbeatable player. The way he played on Sunday at the Players, the way he played on the weekend at Arnold Palmer. And then a couple of weeks ago in Houston, you know, didn't have his best stuff and still was a 5-footer away from a playoff there. So do I think he's going to win? No, it's not quite Tiger versus the field, but it's certainly been the closest we've had to that conversation. And I guess probabilities say he probably won't win, but I wouldn't be surprised. There's a reason why he's 4-1.
Will Haskett with us here on the Payless Liquors Hotline. You know, okay, so we have the 2.5 hour delay, and we're very sad around here because that's happening, Will. So my question—
That's putting it lightly.
Yeah, you know, this is basically me and Mark Dykton.
Is this a collective we, or is this just a—
They're just being good teammates, Will.
No, I mean, okay.
This is like waking up on Christmas morning, and all of a sudden you turn on the news and say, they're de-icing Santa's sleigh. Kids go back to bed for 10 more hours.
I offered to put on the TV for Kevin. He's like, don't bother. It's delayed.
He doesn't want to see me pregame.
I've already watched live from 13 times. I can only take Brandel so much.
Well, Will, here's the thing. We were going to be talking about in the 9 o'clock hour, we're talking about where the Pacers are going to play, right? Where they're going to be in the standings for the upcoming NBA playoffs, and KB was going to be zoned out, right? He watching Paul Casey on hole three.
It's a holiday.
Paul Casey.
Don't think Paul's in the field, unfortunately, this year.
Is Pat Perez in the field? I was trying to think of Liv guys.
He's down at Hooters with John Daly.
Probably. I was thinking, the rain now is going to squish some of this together, so they're going to have to play more holes. It's not going to be the normal 18 on Thursday, Friday. And so they're going to have to catch up in that respect. Some players are. So the schedule is going to change. And then I don't know this. How will this amount of rain, change the course? And which players do you think could be affected by some of the changes because of the weather?
Yeah, from what I've seen so far, Andy, they didn't get as worse of the system as so many other folks did. So, like, Mississippi got pounded, Alabama got pounded, the Gulf Coast got pounded. We're getting pounded right now. I mean, good luck trying to get your kids to school on time right now with localized flooding and everything. It's awful out here right now. So they've gotten it a lot better. There wasn't as much rain. Obviously, just a 2.5 hour delay. It doesn't sound like the wind did much damage either. So from a golf course standpoint, it was playing really firm and fast before the rain hit. Obviously, it's going to be a little bit softer, which is going to make the golf course a little bit more gettable. But again, they've got, not to get too technical, but they've got sub-air systems. So they have the ability to suck moisture out of the greens from underneath the actual putting surfaces. So as long as they don't get full flooding deluges that they can't really control, they can still probably control the moisture to a point. So I would think that by afternoon tomorrow, the golf course will probably be back to where it was for these guys the last couple of days. But it's certainly going to be, I think, an advantage for those that get to play as much golf today as possible. So the early tee times, who it really hurts is Tiger. And I know Kevin doesn't want to hear this, but it really, really hurts Tiger, who had a late tee time, because now he doesn't tee off until practically 4 o'clock. He's not going to finish his round today, which means he's going to play until dark, have to wake up at midnight practically because of the routine it takes to get that guy's body going, and then play more than 18 holes tomorrow to try and extend his cut streak. So I think it hurts anybody who has a late tee time today, because they're going to have a really short night tonight and then a lot of golf to play tomorrow to try and make it to the weekend, which I think with only 89 guys in the field and only a 2.5 hour delay, they should be able to get everything done so that we make the cut tomorrow night and we're ready to go for a weekend, which looks spectacular from a weather standpoint.
Just utter disrespect from the Green Jackets giving Tiger the late, early tee time.
I don't understand
here.
That either. Like, I mean, early, late is the way to go with Tiger. Like, if it's a PGA Tour event, he gets that every single time. But, late, early is just brutal for Tiger these days.
Disrespect. Motivation. Dan Hurley disrespect for Tiger Woods here leading into this Masters. He's Will Haskett. You hear him on these airwaves a lot around major time PGA Tour radio. Always enjoy Will's insights. Will, I do want to try to, I guess, analogy it, if that's a thing, maybe to the final four we just watched. Because I realize, from a golf standpoint, not everyone out there is as nerdy as you or I when it comes to this stuff. So let's just call Scottie Scheffler UConn. Let's call him South Carolina for the women's bracket. Give me Purdue. Give me Alabama. Give me NC State. And I think you get where I'm going with this. Like, okay, who else would you throw in the top tier, like a Purdue? Who would you maybe put on a middle-ish tier, like an Alabama? And then, who would you call Cinderella here from a, men's bracket standpoint?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's funny because I used to do a top 64 in the world golf mashup with the NCAA tournament bracket. And so this year I didn't do the full piece, but I did have a few different things that were in there, and I actually said that Scottie Scheffler was UConn in kind of this scenario. I would say John Rahm is Purdue in the fact that he's the big bad beast on the block in the way that sort of Zach Edey was, but there's just sort of questions as to whether or not he's just as good as your UConn in this scenario in Scottie Scheffler, because Probably doesn't have the same brand cachet now because of the move to Live and just sort of being out off the radar a little bit, but certainly could go blow to blow with Scotty because of his talent. So I think that's probably the easy answer to that one. Alabama, I think, would probably be Xander in the sense that, you know, he's been around for a while, but has Alabama basketball really won anything of massive significance? No. Has Xander won a major? No. And he's had a few moments on the weekends that, you know, lead us to wonder, like, if he's in position again, will it be one of those charges where it's a backdoor top five, or if he's a front runner going into Sunday, how does he sort of fare? And then NC State, so someone who's really hot but isn't a big name or wasn't a big name you would expect going into this week. I mean, you could go to last week's winner, Akshay Bhatia, who's the last guy in the field. That's probably the easiest comparison. You know, wasn't expected to play in the Masters and then wins his way in. And not only did he win his way in, he won his way in dominant fashion. The way that he played, to get really nerdy with you, Kevin, from a strokes gained total standpoint, Akshay Bhatia's numbers last week would have won the last 167 PGA Tour tournaments, including majors in a row. That's how much better he was in the field. And, wow. Oh, by the way, he was in a playoff with Denny McCarthy. And so Denny McCarthy has the same number and loses the tournament. Just to kind of put it into perspective how much better they were than everybody else last week when we were down there in San Antonio. So I think that's a good comp. He's left-handed and he hits it this, you know, low bullet. I kind of like his game a little bit for Augusta. So, yeah, maybe it's Akshay Bhatia who parlays a win and in scenario like NC State did into a run this week.
I like that from Will Haskett.
I do. Those are three good names. Will Haskett joining us. PGA Radio joins us here on the Payless Liquors Hotline Thursday here on The Fan. I got to ask you, who's the most volatile player, like who you can't figure out where they're going to land this weekend? You know, someone who could be in the top five or 10, someone also who could miss the cut and be out by Friday evening. Who would that player be, do you think, and why?
Oh, wow. Rory's not a volatile player, but he missed the cut here last year. He's changed his whole routine. It's an interesting narrative, right? Like, everybody wants to see him win. Like, we all want to see Rory capture the career Grand Slam, but this has now become a much more difficult proposition this week. I'm not sure if I really believe in that answer. I think the most volatile would be, you know, any of the veterans that we haven't seen for a while come from LIV who, you know, what are they going to do? Is it Bryson? Like, Bryson's played really good golf over the last year and a half, like, and is obviously much more of a polarizing sort of figure in the game. Phil Mickelson finished runner up here a year ago and has not played really good golf this year because we kind of forget that he's in his damn mid 50s at this point in time. But it's a golf course where history and knowledge and all of that has more of an impact than anywhere else. So could all of a sudden Phil's name be on the leaderboard overnight tonight, and then he sort of sputters tomorrow? So I think if you're looking for volatility, it'd be some of those big names that are probably coming from LIV. But to me, you know, outside of the Scheffler conversation, there's just so much conversation around Rory, and he's been the one that I've kind of faded a bit this week. Just because I just feel like there's too much pressure externally and internally on this particular week. And he hasn't had his best stuff most of this year on the PGA Tour. And he hasn't been the greatest wedge player. It feels like something that leaves his game in some of the biggest moments. And if he just can't be tidy with those scoring clubs in his hand around Augusta, it's going to be a long week for him. So two different answers, I guess, to that question.
PGA Tour Radio's Will Haskett with us here on the Payless Liquors Hotline. Will, last one from me. It's just kind of the state of the game right now. I hate it. I think it absolutely sucks for the casual fan, let alone the diehard fan. What is next if with the PGA Tour and LIV? What is the next domino to fall? It seems like it's so much up in the air right now. The merger's been pushed back. The handshake agreement is still maybe not even a handshake agreement anymore. What are you on the horizon for, I guess, from that standpoint?
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty numb right now because it's so slow moving, and everything that led to the split in the first place was so quick moving that I think people just expected the resolution to happen as fast as the dissolving did. And that's just not the case because of the amount of contracts that have been signed, because of the powers at play who want to not give up much of their identity. Getting them to all come back together, I think, is going to take a long time. I was hopeful it'd be 2025. I think 2026 before we see anything that's really, truly a unified one. The only difference is that a year removed from last year, the rhetoric now is significantly less combative. you know, everybody is saying, all the top players are saying, hey, we need to figure out a way to come back together. I think John Rahm has even sort of echoed some things that makes it feel like he has a tiny bit of buyer's remorse and like, hey, you know what? Here on LIV, we need to be playing 72 holes. Like, we need to, you know, find a way to change it up a little bit to get, you know, the competitive spirit of the game back a little bit. But the one thing that none of these guys can deny, even though they'll say, like, we need to do it for the fans, and I'd argue that most of them didn't do it thinking about the fans at all, is that no one is watching. This is a massive weekend for the sport, because if there's any tournament that is immune to the split, it would be this particular week. And I was on yesterday with Jake and the crew there. And, you know, it's so weird to be an Indiana guy that covers the PGA Tour, because this reeks of the IRL CART split so similarly.
Sure.
It's crazy. And so what happened? The 500s ratings eventually started to dip as well. And you thought that that crown jewel could, you know, withstand whatever was happening in a fractured sort of sport. And while this week has nothing to do with the PGA Tour, has nothing to do with LIV, it's its own entity that is the most popular, most watched golf event of the year. If we have a decent leaderboard on Sunday and the ratings are low compared to last year or 5 years ago or 10 years ago, then the sport has a real problem. And if that isn't the final wake-up call for everybody to figure their ish out, then I don't know what will be. But I'm very curious to see what the number is come Sunday.
He is Will Haskett, our NCAA basketball master's analogies. Call UConn Scotty Scheffler, call Purdue, I guess call John Rahm Purdue, call Xander Schauffele Alabama, and a little bit of a long shot, two guys that were rather incredible last week, Akshay Bhatia and Denny McCarthy, who can roll the rock really like no one else. Will, always enjoy our conversations. If you don't mind, you care if we run it back Monday morning?
Yeah, let's make it happen. And Mark and I will be texting, tweeting each other about Cubs pitching woes the entire time, too.
I heard so you guys bitching and moaning about Kyle Hendricks at the start of the segment. Really a shame I couldn't hear that combo. Yeah,
we're more Jose Kwas bashing than it was Kyle Hendricks.
Jose Kwas needs to go.
We're 2 weeks into the season, and Mark wants to send people back to AA already. He's done with them.
Go back
Triple
to
A.
Iowa, Mark's yelling at people.
No, we're not
here.
Messing with AA. AA is where all the studs are. Don't mess with the AA program. We got all
You're
the
right.
studs in Tennessee right now.
You're right.
Well, thank you, man.
See
him. Walked outside today, they would say duh. A couple of items of note. Again, the Masters opening round delayed until 10:30. It's a 2.5 hour delay, so round one will certainly bleed into tomorrow. Hopefully they can still get 36 holes in before Saturday and make a cut. And over at IMS, again, probably to be expected. We saw yesterday's open test get cut short due to Mother Nature. A lot of activity before that, but today's open test also has been canceled, so that means nothing on an oval until May 14th after the Grand Prix. Obviously get out there for practice leading into qualifying later that week for the Indianapolis 500. Sounded like a pretty good day for Kyle Larson yesterday over there, as a lot of attention, and that storyline will be major. Joseph Newgarden topping the speed charts, a defending champ. Kyle Larson right behind him yesterday, so a pretty nice acclimation period, sounds like, for the NASCAR driver.
You know, I'm learning. Jake yesterday, you know, Jake said that Kyle Larson, he is the, Jimmy asked him, how would you categorize him at you know, at oval racing? And he said Peyton Manning or Andrew Luck. Good. That's how he said it.
Again, Jake would know. Yes, I mean, Jake would know certainly much more than I. Just from talking with people, they're like, this is the best opportunity. And what? I mean, Kurt Busch was pretty good. I guess that was close to a decade ago now. Might have even been a decade ago. But he ran pretty consistently. But I think there was legitimate thought with Chip Ganassi Racing that
he could win. Yeah.
Kyle Larson is going to be there late in the race. So obviously you don't know until it all gets underway. But I think even more than Jimmy Johnson, to be totally honest with you, I think there's a legit chance here. So that'll be a fun storyline coming up as we get more into that in the month of May.
All right, so we're going to do this. It's a Thursday today. We have two solid weeks before the NFL draft, and what that means as well is we have 10 shows until the NFL draft. So we picked 10 players, and of course yesterday we had some fun with it if they end up not taking any of the 10 players that we throw your way. But we have 10 players here that we're going to go through one each day from today, and then obviously a couple couple weeks from now when it's the start of the NFL draft, and we're going to highlight one player. If we think ultimately Chris Ballard and the Colts will take them, the biggest threats, some mock draft updates as well. Today, our first one is going to be Brock Bowers. So let's hit the open. Colts on the clock here on the Wake Up Call.
The Colts are on the clock.
All right, so it's going to be a mix. This is obviously the only tight end, KB, that we're going to have on our list is Brock Bowers. Now, I did find interesting, and again, a lot of mock drafts do have Brock Bowers going before number 15. I found this interesting. So today, Matt Miller, who both of us like a lot at ESPN, kind of the
Mark, we need to get him on before the draft.
The new McShay almost.
Dave Brugler tomorrow, by the way.
Yeah, Brugler's fantastic, has the beast up on The Athletic, and I just found this interesting to start the conversation. This went up this morning on ESPN.com, and the question was, what are we hearing about each team in the draft, specifically the first round? And for the Colts, I found this interesting. I'm going to read this to you, okay? This is from Matt Miller. He says, cornerback stands out as one of the Colts' biggest needs and realistic targets at number 15. As long as Brock Bowers is off the board. One source with a rival team believes the Colts would quote, run the card in if Bowers was available. And then goes on to talk about the cornerback position, Terrion Arnold, Quinyon Mitchell, guys that we'll talk about here in the next week and a half or so. But what do you make of that? And then I think both of us, both of us love Brock Bowers and really think Shane Steichen would do something pretty damn good with him.
Absolute stud. Stud in the SEC means even more. I mean, he's dominated in that conference from day one. Remember how good he was as a freshman? Like, and it's not like this is some overwhelming physique at tight end. You know, honestly, I don't think he would meet a lot of Chris Ballard's desired criteria from a height and weight standpoint at tight end. He's not the power forward, but just as a versatile tight end weapon, Shane Steichen has to be foaming at the mouth of such an idea. You know, again, that versatile tight end, I think, is something that I should stress even more because, you know, oftentimes, Andy, if you bring a tight end on the field, oh, he's our blocker. Oh, he's our receiver. But guys that can do both, that leads to unpredictable things. The defense, you aren't tipping your hand necessarily to the defense. And if you look at Bowers at Georgia, he lined up all over the field. Hell, they gave him the football like as a running back in jet sweeps and things like that quite often. So, again, absolute stud. The questions I would have would be, does he get to 15? Do you feel like it's just a hair too rich positional value?
Right.
That's
right.
Never been a Ballard thing, really. I mean, just look across the board how he's drafted. I'll take a guard at 6. You know, I'll take a running back in round 2. So, I don't think it would be, but you know, go back to the tight end question that you asked him at the combine, Andy. You know, you can listen to his answer about his tight end room, and he sounds pretty pleased with it and believes that you just got to let it grow. And then also he can acknowledge in that answer, we maybe don't have a dominant number one. So is drafting 4 tight ends in the last 3 years, which is what they've done, does that lead to any hesitancy?
Well, and then
and is it too much of a luxury pick, I guess, would be the question.
Yeah, I think that's the question. We'll give our scale here in a second if we think he's actually going to end up with the Colts. Ballard has, I think out of, maybe you would disagree with this, but I feel like out of all of the positions that you could disagree with Chris Ballard on, do you think that tight end, now corner might be one, and that's probably where they go in round number one. You easily could make, they could even go out and get somebody else, right, in free agency. They could still build that room up. I feel like the biggest disconnect between potentially fan base and Ballard might be in that tight end room. And a lot of that goes back to guys that they've drafted look fine, but they only look fine. And, you know, last year, the storyline, and rightfully so, was we didn't get to see any of Anthony Richardson, or very much of Anthony Richardson. You didn't get to see any of Jelani Woods. And so if Jelani Woods had, you know, 59 catches or something in Shane Steichen's system, and you saw some glimpses in how Steichen could use him, and he had 4, 5, 6 touchdowns or whatever, I think you would look at Jelani Woods and say, boy, a year under his belt with Steichen, get him even a little bit healthier, and this is going to be one of our guys. And then the other complementary tight ends, Will Mallory, Granson, etc. If Mo Alie-Cox ends up still being on the roster next year, you could fill those guys in more of the, you know, if you think Mo Alie-Cox, a blocking tight end, like you would kind of pigeonhole him as that, then you would feel much better. But much like Anthony Richardson, we didn't get to see any of Jelani Woods, so I don't know if Jelani Woods is an NFL player.
It's one of the bigger bummers from last season, because at the end of the Jeff Saturday era, that was one of the few individual bright spots that you were, oh wow, remember that game against the Steelers in prime time? He was great, and then you just didn't see much after that. Let me throw this your way, Andy. We did this back in January when we got to the Final Four in the NFL. There was no denying you had stud tight ends everywhere. You had George Kittle, you had Travis Kelce, you had Mark Andrews, you had Sam Laporta. Now, where were those guys drafted? Kelce?
Right.
Round three. Andrews? Round three.
Boy, Kittle was even
Kittle,
further.
Round five.
Yeah.
Sam Laporta was a round two guy, and early in round two, but still, that's not 15 overall. Should there be the general, you should wait on tight ends? And there are other tight ends you can point to that were taken in round one that haven't lived up
well,
to it.
Eric Ebron, Cole Kmet was taken. I mean, he's been okay, Mark, you would say.
I mean, you would say as of now, Kyle Pitts hasn't lived up to that pick.
Sure.
Granted, the quarterback play hasn't been great. I would say TJ Hockenson's been a nice player. I don't think he's been whatever he was drafted at. So you have some of those. Is there hesitancy there of just, man, 15, it'd be nice, but he's a tight end?
I guess my thing is...
And is he just a tight end, I guess, is probably another question.
To me, it's not even 15. The way I look at this is if a playoff-level team is going to end up taking him at 22 or 23 or 25 or whatever it may be, I'm fine with taking that guy at 15. Like, that's how I view it. Now, you know, if it's like the Raiders a couple years ago, I remember Mel Kiper's like, they took a safety. Remember, the Raiders took a safety like 4 or 5 years ago. Then Mel Kiper's like, I had a fourth round grade on him, and he ended up going really high.
That's most Raiders picks.
Yeah, but if it was that, it would be different. So to me, I don't overreact, and I would even add to it, every comparison that you see on these draft websites, or the majority of them, I'm trying to find one that doesn't say George Kittle. I mean, all the comparisons to Brock Bowers are George Kittle. And
correct.
I would even say this. Bowers probably is not going to be, you know, the nasty blocker that Kittle. I mean, Kittle.
But he's known as a guy that can more than hold his own.
But Bowers, you mentioned like a jet sweep. You can do, I think you might do even different things on offense, quite frankly, than you can with Kittle.
Go back to the Chris Boward comment that I absolutely loved at the Combine. We need to get more yards after catch. Who was the number one tight end in the NFL in yards after catch this year? It was Kittle. Look at Bowers after the catch. I mean, it is.
It's a great point.
It is why. I mean, at times, Andy, it's a man amongst boys in the SEC. And again, he's 6'3 and 240. It's not like this is some 6'7. He's not Jelani Woods.
Yeah, Jelani Woods is 6'7, 253. That's what he's listed as.
So that's always been fascinating to me with Bowers. Teams to watch ahead of the Colts. Teams that would worry you about plucking Bowers off the
board. Yeah, I mean, I think you have to look at the Jets at 10. Listen, I know a lot of people have talked about the Chargers. I think the Chargers at 5. I don't know. Don't you feel like they're going to... Boy, their roster just needs so much. Don't you feel like they trade back and get assets so somebody can move up for one of these quarterbacks?
They need some O-line help, too.
Yeah, so I just kind of think the Chargers don't go tight end there. Offensive line, you mentioned. I just don't see the Giants or, of course, the Titans or Kyle Pitts is there.
What about Tennessee, though? I mean, they need O-line help, but, I mean, could you imagine? Ridley, okay, Hopkins, so Bowers, Tony Pollard, and Bowers for Will Levis.
Bowers came out. Remember, we played the sound.
He wants Nashville, right?
In the middle of the season, we played the sound of him saying, yeah, it wouldn't be so bad to be drafted in Nashville by the Tennessee Titans.
More behaved than Morgan Wallen in Nashville?
Boy, did you see that video?
Okay.
There's video of that of the chair going out.
Oh, I haven't seen that.
And like, it's not like he tosses it. He forcibly throws
frankly,
a chair.
Frankly, a miracle he didn't hurt anybody.
He needs to be in trouble on that one. I would say my number one
Chuck
team.
Chuck Pagano's waiting for him in an alley.
Boy, I know who I'm taking in that fight. I'd go number 10. I'd go the New York Jets.
Yeah, Jets.
Jets would be at the top of my list of teams that would take Bowers. And I don't know who would be second on that list, potentially.
Jets was kind of a clear one for me. Drew points this out. You know, you guys aren't wrong about tight ends. So many have struggled early. But It seems like they did so either on bad teams or bad schemes. I don't have that concern in Indy. I think that's a very real comment.
Well, I feel that way about Pitts. I mean, we're going to find out here pretty soon.
And Raheem Morris has said that about their quarterback play in Atlanta. But yes, I would have zero concern about Shane Steichen making sure Brock Bowers was heavily, heavily involved. 1 to 10 scale, realistic pick for the Colts at 15, I'd say 4.5.
Yeah.
And 95% of that has to do with him being there at 15.
Yeah.
I don't see it.
Yeah, I'm a 5 on this one. I've already went through on some of the prospects, and I've, you know, kind of initially said, this is a 2 or a 3, or this is, you know, a 7 or an 8. I could see this happening. This is a 5, and it's a 5 for me. I'm lukewarm for a couple reasons, and we've talked about them. A, does he get there to number 15? I would even say 3 reasons. B, this is not a guy you would ever feel like if Ballard were to move up a couple spots, this would not be the type of position that he would ever do it. And then C, we've talked about it. He spoke pretty highly, maybe higher than what we think of his tight end room. You know, Ballard's words, whether it be with us or in various different press conferences, what he has said about his tight end room is not totally the way that the fan base thinks of that same room.
That's why it's a 3 for me, because I just feel like even if he's there, like the amount of things that have to happen for him to even be at 15, and then for the Colts to use that pick on him, I just feel is highly unlikely.
I'm a little torn on that. I understand where you guys are coming from, but I do think this is unique. I mean, I do think this would be an outlier, and like, I mean, can you really bank on another whatever out of Mo Alie-Cox? Can you really bank? I mean, what's Drew Ogletree's situation?
I know.
He's still on the exempt list.
I know.
Is he going to be a Colt? Is he not going to be a Colt?
I can't imagine he would
so
be.
Those are just some questions that I have. That 4 seed is still in play.
Whether it's audiobooks or all-time greatest hits, long live listening to your favorites. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you.
St. Jude treats children across the country and around the world, regardless of color, creed, or financial capability, because they're committed to love and care for their neighbors. Join me in helping St. Jude give every child with cancer the chance they deserve to survive. Together, we can save more lives. Call now to become a partner in hope. 1-800-411-9898. That's 1-800-411-9898.
Whether it's audiobooks or all-time greatest hits, long live listening to your favorites. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you.
When St. Jude opened in 1962, childhood cancer was considered incurable. Since then, St. Jude has helped push the overall survival rate from 20% to more than 80%. St. Jude won't stop until no child dies from cancer. Join me today in supporting St. Jude by calling 1-800-411-9898. That's 1-800-411-9898 to become a partner in hope. Your gift to St. Jude could last a lifetime.
Hey, for the Indiana Pacers as they get ready for their final 2 games of the season. Tomorrow night is a 7:30 tip from Cleveland. Sunday, 1 o'clock here, the home finale with Atlanta. We'll see. It sounds like Donovan Mitchell, I mean, he played last night. We'll see if he plays tomorrow night. Cleveland right there with Indiana from a seeding standpoint, the head-to-head tiebreaker up for grabs. And we'll see about Trae Young. I don't think Atlanta can move really anywhere. They're going to be in the play-in against Chicago, the bad of the two play-ins, so they'll have to win 2 games to get in the playoffs. I don't know if they want Trae Young to knock off rust. Maybe he'll play on Sunday, but just some items to watch. I think it is Pacers win 2, Orlando lose 1, and I think you're the 4 seed. Scott Agnes is with us right now from Fieldhouse File. Scott, do I have that right? You win 2, Orlando lose 1, you're the 4 seed, because if you win 2, that means you beat Cleveland, so you'd move above Cleveland.
Yeah, I mean, those are the complicated stakes, and then you would have the tiebreaker over Cleveland as well, because you would have the season sweep.
I think that is correct, and I don't know if they could move any higher, but I'd just say 4 seed because that would get you home court in round 1. Again, Scott Agnes with us here from the Fieldhouse files. Scott, you wrote on TJ McConnell earlier this week, and all of a sudden it seems like it has started to bubble a bit, and probably no more so than the LeBron James comments from yesterday. For those that missed it, Scott, you can react to this. This was LeBron James and JJ Redick on their podcast talking about TJ McConnell.
Like, one of my favorite players in the NBA right now is TJ McConnell.
All right, just do it one.
TJ McConnell is like,
like Draymond, but a guard.
Yeah, he's like Draymond as a point guard. Yeah. He is. I'm talking about TJ McConnell, one of my favorite players. Yeah. NBA.
TJ, he's like a. There's certain guys that check into the game and it changes the flow of the game.
Yeah, for sure.
Peyton Pritchard's like that.
Peyton Pritchard.
Ish Smith was like that.
Ish Smith was like that, yeah, for sure.
Scott, I'm trying to think back on that Lakers game. It was a great performance by the Pacers a few weeks ago, and I guess either of the Lakers games because they play them twice in a week. Do you recall anything like specific McConnell did? I mean, LeBron's right, of course, but like anything that maybe would have really, really left an impression on LeBron?
Not off the top of my head. I think he's probably just watching ball right now and seeing how TJ is balling out right now and playing so well. He's shooting 60% from three, you know, and since the All-Star break, he's just commanded the floor and done so well. Like, we don't talk about his offense, right? Like, any of that has previously been a bonus, but it's been necessary here since the All-Star break, especially, and what he's been able to accomplish. And let's even go back to earlier in the season, right? Remember, Nembhard was slow out of the gate, not even for his own reasons. He had that kidney stone that kept him out of training camp early on. Then he had some other injury, I want to say an ankle or something, that caused him to miss time. Then, of course, Tyrese, at your starting point, missed 10-plus games. Or not 10-plus. Missed a handful of games right there just because of that left hamstring injury. You needed him to step up even more. And I think the difference now is he's gone above and beyond what you expected him to do. And on top of that, he's just an ultimate teammate. He's a fun guy out there. I think he helps the locker room in many ways. And you can just tell, as I even started my article with, you can just tell he's a coach's son. Like, he gets it. He says all the right things. He's all about team. He's a guy you definitely want to play with.
Scott Agnes with us here on the Fan. He joins us, Payless Liquors Hotline from Fieldhouse Files. Scott, it's funny. I looked it up while you guys were talking. The last two games against the Lakers, our guy TJ McConnell, 17 points, 7 assists, and 16 points, 3 rebounds, and 3 assists. That's the last two games against LeBron James and company. And LeBron and JJ Redick talking about how much they love TJ McConnell was not a bet I made before this NBA season. I don't mind admitting it. I asked Dustin Dupirak this yesterday. I don't know if he totally agreed with me, but you know, TJ McConnell, he is one of those guys. He's played well enough that we haven't been sitting here day in, day out, Scott, harping about Benedict Mathurin being injured and being out. Not that Mathurin isn't a big loss. He is, and you would have loved to have seen him down the stretch in these games. You could have used him in many of these losses, of course. You know, you love for a young guy like that to get that playoff experience, and unfortunately, he's not going to have any of that. But I thought when he went down for the year over a month ago, Scott, I really thought that was going to be a talking point that we alluded to almost daily with the Pacers, and that hasn't been the case, and TJ McConnell's a big reason why.
No, that's absolutely correct, because you mentioned those numbers, what TJ did in the Laker game. It's funny that those don't pop out, to me at least, only because that's what he's been doing here
exactly
for the last couple of months. Like, it seems like on the regular here, he's getting 16 points, 6 assists, a couple of rebounds, and it's 21 minutes per game. Like, that's the best part. Like, if you look at his numbers per 36, they're incredible. I think he's like second in total points per 36. Something remarkable right now just about what he's been able to get accomplished. And in terms of Benedict, you're right. First of all, it was because he was kind of away from the team in L.A. to have surgery, so it was kind of out of sight, out of mind. And then there was not that drop-off, you're right, that we are necessarily expecting right away. Now, you do miss his toughness. You do miss his kind of bulldog mentality to get to the basket, get fouled. He's better than anyone on this team at getting fouled. And that's something you will miss in the postseason. But what TJ's been able to do is fantastic. Ben Shepherd stepped up. The one player that we probably all expected to see more of was Jairus Walker as a result, too, of Ben maybe being out, and you try to reshuffle players and lineups and that sort of thing. That necessarily hadn't been the case. And then on top of that, you talk about players being out. How about Doug McDermott was out for, what was it, 10 games or so, several weeks there. And so you needed TJ even more. And so the combination of TJ and Ben Shepherd in that backcourt have stepped up nicely here since Ben has been out.
He is Scott Agnes. You find his work at Fieldhouse Files podcast as well. Fieldhouse Files, obviously a great follow when it comes to the Pacers as they have their final road game of the season tomorrow night in Cleveland. Scott, it seems like the McConnell attention has been followed up very quickly by the Obi Toppin attention, and deservedly so over the last couple of weeks. Toppin is a free agent. Jalen Smith is a player option, so you know he very well could be a free agent. Do you almost view that as an either-or, given Pascal Siakam's likely financial situation with the Pacers?
That could be fair. Yeah, the difference in the two is Jalen Smith has the option to decide, you know, hey, he can exercise his contract worth about $5 million or go elsewhere. But on the other side, the Pacers can pay Obi Toppin what another team is offering him. So you have less of risk, right, because they have his bird rights, meaning if another team offers him, you know, $10 million per, let's just say out there. Even if the Pacers are over the cap because they have his rights, they can go out and re-sign him, no trouble. It's just additional money, certainly. And it'll be curious what his market looks like. Like, it's Obi's story is interesting, too, just because of the way in which it's kind of been a roller coaster type season for him. He's got to feel like, right, like he's thrown in, new team. They're hyping up how much it's going to be great to see Haliburton, Bruce Brown, and him run and gun and produce in the open court. Then they ultimately decide, hey, we need more defense. We need more size. So mid-December, they make the change to the starting lineups. Jalen Smith, I think, starting there at that power forward spot. Then you make the trade. Then it's Pascal Siakam at that power forward spot. And each time, it feels like Toppin, without any negativity or fanfare or whatever, has just gone about his business and adapted and embraced it. I think he's having fun with this team. I think he's enjoyed. Remember, he's from New York, so that was playing at home, which adds a layer of complexity. It adds a layer of pressure. I think he's enjoyed getting outside that bubble and just having fun with this roster. And then in particular here, KB, over the last couple of months as well, just what he's been able to produce off the bench, and to see his three-point shot go down like it has, over 40%, to see him lead the league in two-point field goal percentage, remarkable as well. We knew he could run. We knew he could dunk like he did the previous game. But those efficiencies on top of being a great team player, while probably experiencing some pressure of being in a contract year, what he's been able to do and produce makes him a worthwhile candidate to absolutely consider bringing back.
You got the Pacers in Cleveland tomorrow night. Our coverage here on The Fan beginning at 7 o'clock. That tip-off at 7:30. Just two games left for the Pacers this season. Scott Agnes joining us here from Fieldhouse Files on the Payless Liquors Hotline. I want to go back to the Raptors game the other night, if you don't mind. The slow start, the slow first quarter, down 10. I think it was like, 35-25 at the end of the first quarter, but trailed by more than that. You saw the early timeout yet again from Coach Rick Carlisle. Was that a... oh, crap, they did it again? Or at the end of the game, did you think, okay, they did it again, but they learned and they bounced back? How did you view that slow start? Because, you know, we know tomorrow night and we know in the playoffs that ain't going to cut it.
No. And actually, that was my response. I go, all right, well, you can do that against the Toronto team. But why hasn't that lesson been learned? It's not like you need a terrific start. You just can't set yourself back so bad that you're in a 10-point hole, or you're down by 17, or you're just in something so insurmountable, because we have seen it cost them, too, in the last couple of weeks where they do fall behind. I forget which opponent it was, but they trailed for most of the game. They fought back and fought back, took the lead in the fourth quarter, and then just ran out of steam and didn't have enough to put it over the line. And that's what concerns me about it. Is once you get to the playoffs, you're playing one of those top teams. You're playing a great defensive team like the Magic or whatever. That generally, that's not going to be possible to overcome a 20-point lead. Now, the Pacers this season have done it. It feels like about a dozen times where they've fallen behind by 10-plus points and been able to respond. So they have shown they are capable, but you hate to put yourself in that situation. And I thought what T.J. McConnell said at halftime, just saying, hey, we got to grow up. We got to learn from this. We've got to mature. That's absolutely spot on. It's what they, though, have been saying for several months. We need to see that corrected. I'm not sure why it hasn't to this point, and that's where you're having to lean on that second unit, on TJ, to jumpstart things, and you want to see more maturity out of that first unit to not necessarily have a terrific start, but not just have fall behind many times like they have 11-2 or 9-4, and Rick is always having to burn that first time out to light into the guys and fire them up a little bit. Shouldn't be necessary now.
Scott Agnes with us here, Fieldhouse Files. Scott, I always enjoy our conversations, but I found it fitting yesterday that I was like, you know what? This makes a lot of sense now. With Scott joining us tomorrow, he can provide some great context around it. The Indiana Fever, the announcement yesterday of 36 of their 40 games on national television, based off past Fever seasons, based off the league as a whole, could you offer some context around just kind of what that announcement means to you in terms of Caitlin Clark's impact?
Yeah, first of all, it means that the WNBA and its partners definitely took notice, like we all did, of the NCAA tournament and the record ratings and how the women's championship game outrated the men's and how they've just recorded record ratings after record ratings. And then on top of that, you just see the social media following and everything. Everything is clicking right now for Caitlin Clark, for Iowa, for women's basketball as a whole. And it's really been that case for the last several years. And so national TV schedule comes out and it's the Fever, a team that has the number one pick because they've had one of the worst records in the league over the last, have had their worst record over the last couple of years, right? Like, imagine, this year, the Charlotte Hornets all of a sudden have the most TV games next year, right? That would be unthinkable. Even the Spurs, while they had Victor Wembanyama, they weren't placed one of the top national TV games, but the Fever were. 36 of their 40 games, 90% of them will be available outside of just regular coverage here. And for example, last year, the Fever had 8 games where the only place to watch it was on their Facebook page. That's where this difference comes along. Now, it will take some effort. It might take some money for those that maybe don't subscribe to some platforms because it is a variety of platforms. You can get CBS and ABC over the air. But for example, there's 4 games on over-the-air TV. Before the season, the Pacers had just one, and it was on cable TV, and it was on TNT. So point being in all this is the networks want Caitlin Clark because fans want Caitlin Clark. And come Monday is when that can become official. But before then, I think this is a great way to continue to drum up interest and carry that momentum from that tournament into the WNBA and Fever season. And the last point here, the notable thing is the Aces, who have been dominant in the WNBA, have one fewer national TV broadcast, and this includes streaming platforms as well, but one fewer than the Fever. It's just remarkable. It's like the Taylor Swift effect. I'm not kidding you. In terms of Caitlin Clark right now and people just wanting to see her, wanting to get a photo of her and just get a glimpse of what she's doing right now.
They're also, Scott Agnes with us, going to be on something called Ion TV, Scott. And we were wondering, we looked it up, and NCIS reruns are very popular on Ion TV.
Don't forget about Chicago PD.
You got it for you. Listen, Chicago PD as well. I was wondering, your favorite NCIS city, is it Los Angeles, New Orleans, Sydney, or Hawaii? I'm sure you're a big fan.
Sydney.
Sydney, yeah.
I actually have watched it, but I like the original, like most things. I think it's just regular NCIS.
Scott, I did see the last one for me. I did see the Fever are still accepting like single game tickets. I mean, those are, you know, up whatever on sale. Do you have any sort of feel on where they're at season ticket wise or just in general? I mean, if you look at the secondary market, it is wild to see just how expensive not only Fever games are, but also these games in other cities. You brought up the Aces. The Aces have already announced they're moving their Fever game in Las Vegas to the bigger T-Mobile Arena out there for this season. Any updates, like ticket-wise, from those over at the Fever?
Yeah, it hasn't just been national TV networks. It's been other teams already. You mentioned the Aces. I think Phoenix, after Diana Taurasi's comment, marketed it something like the vet versus the rook, because they can't say Caitlin Clark just yet, right? And it's obviously the Indiana Fever coming to Phoenix and other teams as well. I think the price in Chicago is over 100, 200 bucks right now. So you're even seeing across the league that game being marketed when Indiana's in town, and ticket prices go up. Now, here locally, in terms of Fever tickets, you just kind of have to read the context and read between the lines right now about how ticket sales have gone. For example, that end zone, previously one of them had been kind of a kid's zone, and you can walk around and get face painting. No, those are seats. Those are absolutely some of the best seats in the arena, and those will be seats this year. The other thing is, yeah, they're selling single-game tickets in the balcony over the 10-day period leading up to the draft, two games per day. Well, I logged on the first day. I was just curious, what's this going to look like? According to the system, they were gone in 3 minutes.
Wow.
You would click it like it was Taylor Swift and say, sorry, somebody else has already added this to their cart. Please try again. Okay, tries these two. Sorry, these don't. It was unreal. I had flashbacks to Taylor Swift all over again. That's why that comparison, as far off as Taylor is from everybody else, actually is relatable in this instance. In years past, last thing here is you would normally have kind of like the curtains right around the balcony. No, there's no need for curtains with Caitlin. You're opening those up. You're welcoming everyone. I can't imagine what the team store is about going to do just in jersey sales here coming up starting next week.
Just went to StubHub May 16th, okay? That is the opener, Liberty at Fever. Scott, the cheapest ticket, and like you said, the curtains are pulled. I mean, I'm talking upper deck here. Like, I mean, yeah. I've sat up there, section 226 in the corner. $66 is the cheapest ticket to get in the building. I'd be willing to bet most nights you can get in the building for, what, 20 bucks up there for a Pacer game? Maybe even cheaper than that. And, I mean, if you go just a little bit lower level, you know, section 16, $499, that's the cheapest ticket. You go up to the club level, you know, I'm seeing 200. If you want to sit kind of mid-court, you want to go in the corners, you're still talking north of 150. So, yeah, just absolutely crazy.
The interesting thing here will become, though, is, and I hope it settles in so people can actually watch her, is how much of this is now being driven by the secondary ticket market in terms of just the ridiculous prices, right? Like, obviously, you'll happily pay 20 bucks, 100 bucks to see her play. But even before tickets were, you know, totally on sale, you were seeing some tickets being listed on there and some ridiculous prices. I hope the secondary market, I mean, it's out of anybody's control, but I hope that it is manageable here so that people can go see your play and get reasonable prices and those sorts of things. But this is just a complete 180 for any team, and the Fever are benefiting greatly from this in terms of just going from a thing you can do in the summer and a team on the rise to, like, this could be an event every single game this summer. I'll be curious if some of the national networks have reporters in daily, that type of thing. Like, how much do they lean into it in terms of daily coverage? I'm very curious to see how that plays out.
Monday, 7:30, the draft for the WNBA when it all becomes official, and we'll find out, I guess, Sunday evening exactly what it looks like for the Pacers from a seed standpoint. And right now they're tracking towards a top six seed, which means nothing until next weekend from a playoff standpoint as they try to avoid the play-in. Scott, thank you, my man. Enjoy the Masters.
Absolutely. Will do. You too.